This podcast is part of the Deluxe Edition Network. To find other great shows on the network, head over to deluxeeditionnetwork.com. That's deluxeeditionnetwork.com.
The podcast making public transit taking kiss stealing wheeling dealing son of a gun Tim the nerd welcoming you to another episode of Friends Talking Nerdy, part of the Deluxe Edition Network. Head to deluxeeditionnetwork.com to find out more information about all the lovely shows on the den. Seated next to me, keeping plastic away from our dear Mimsy, we have the greatest legal mind in the Pacific Northwest, Professor Aubrey.
Hello there, Tim. Yes, I am on cat duty right now, trying to get Mimsy off the table.
I got it taken care of here.
Thank you.
Every recording time, I think we've noticed this before. Every time we fire up the microphone here, that's when the cats think, now's our time to be bad.
Or they're like, why are you paying attention to something other than us?
Yeah.
Like, why are you looking at each other and talking?
I'm here, mister. You got soft food in the kitchen, mister. It's just like that. Yeah. Anyway, how has your week been?
It's been interesting. Definitely interesting. It was my first day back, or my first week back at work after winter break. I was hoping it would be more of a break week. But as we know now, I spent a couple of days in mediation on behalf of my union with my employer, and we ended up winning a bunch of things that were working conditions type things about, you know, how long's the work day and where do you have to work and what do you have to do while you're working, etc. We got some really good gains there. And so it was worth those really long days, but they were really long days. They were exhausting.
Yeah, I know one of them was over 12 hours.
Yeah.
And I know going into the experience, you were not looking forward to it at all. I would say probably pretty low emotionally in terms of what happened there, and you know, which is understandable because of the ramifications of what union work involves. You got to think of the downsides that can occur too.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to manage the risk. You're taking a risk based on what you've assessed the other person's risk avoidance is. It's all about who has the riskier position. And that's very hard to tell. So, you know, it's not like there's a formula or that it's like, okay, we have a list and once we get all those things, then we're done. Because really in negotiations, neither party ends up very happy. They both end up a little mad that they didn't get everything they wanted. But it's not possible for two people to get the same thing. So there has to be compromise.
And ideally, if both sides are coming from the same mindset of, you know, understanding that they both have to work together to make this whole thing called work successful, you know, if everybody's coming to the table with that mindset, then good, you know. And I understand, too, you know, whether it be union side or, you know, administration side, you want to play the cards you feel you have available to see what you can get. Because, again, you know, if it is a compromise, you want to be able to fight for what you believe in as much as you can. But at the end of the day, it's nice to see people finally understand when it's time to, you know, fold those cards and wait for another hand, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's very hard to know. You've got to be able to live with a lot of ambiguity.
Yeah, though I will say from that second day with the 12-hour day, like, if you had balls, they'd be 12 feet and you'd be carrying them in a wheelbarrow that day. You walking in like, yeah.
It was a great feeling when it immediately happened. It was such a great feeling to be out of risk for once, right? For the first time in over 300 days, we had agreed to something. Something was concrete. We had gotten gains that we were going to be able to keep. So it was very euphoric.
Mm-hmm. You were coming out like...
Total Rocky sort of situation, yes. And, you know, then afterwards, it's like, oh, did I do the right thing? Are people going to be upset? Because everything is somebody's pet project. And so everybody wants their pet project funded or their pet project adopted. So it's you've got to figure that out, too, because another risk is you can't get your membership to ratify your agreement because they disagree with what your decisions were.
Well, it, from the sounds of it, it sounds like some positive steps were made so that hopefully there's a peaceful resolution to where everybody can, like you said, not necessarily walk away thinking they got everything they wanted, but at least understood that they fought for, you know, their beliefs as much as they could and found the best possible compromise to move forward.
Yep, I guess.
I know. There you go. But anyway, anything else exciting happened to you this week?
Well, I just received in the mail my Healthy Oregon Project Inherited Genetic Risk Screening Research Study. So this is a research study that OHSU, Oregon Health Science University, is going to be doing, where they're collecting genetic information from Oregonians to see what disease risks they have, the genetically marked disease risks, and correlating the number of morbidity or mortality associated with the disease with those who have a genetic marker for it versus those who don't. So, for example, if there are 100 people who get yellow fever and 50 of them have the genetic marker and 50 of them don't, then we know it's sort of a half and half contribution of nature versus nurture to the progression of that disease. So it's this really great research study, and I'm going to be part of it. And they sent me my little kit to saliva screen me. And I assume I've just got to collect my saliva, and they sent me an envelope, and I just send that right back. And on the envelope, it says, exempt human specimen.
It's not stool.
Not stool, but a human specimen. It is bodily fluid.
Yeah. Now, do you know what the what their policy is on sharing information? Reason I bring that up, you have places like Ancestry.com, 23andMe that do similar DNA type of testing. And it's been discovered that when the government asks them for certain DNA files, they just go, here you go, and not worried about people's data or anything like that. Do you know anything about that in regards to this study?
Well, this is a study done by a well-respected research university hospital system, and it's human research. So it has gone through the utmost rigorous review of human subject treatment. So all of the data is subject to, I want to say FERPA, but I mean...
Like doctor patient privilege?
No, it's the HIPAA. Sorry, the HIPAA, the Health Insurance Portability... blah, blah, Privacy Act, which is says that your health information can't be shared with anyone without your consent. So, you know, without undertaking a thorough investigation, those are the reasons I felt comfortable doing it. But I also have done Ancestry.com.
Well, I mean, I did Ancestry.com as well. My sister paid for it, so I thought, why not? You know, so I'm not exactly like Mr. You know, you've got to save every bit of information you can. You can't give it to the government. But, you know, hearing that certain companies are more than willing to just hand it over without even waiting for a simple, you know, like...
Notice to you.
Notice to me or official, like a
court order
or something like that, you know, like that should be protected information. And that's a different topic altogether. It was more busting your balls than anything. But anyway,
that you're busting my balls.
Yeah,
busting my balls here.
How you doing? What are you doing? Eh? That does sound interesting as well. And, you know, when it comes to science, this is how science works. They put out a study like this to get information. They get the information collected. And that way, once they have this data, they're able to cross fingers, hopefully prepare for the future in much better ways than we have the ability to do so today. Because even though today feels like we're the most technologically advanced, I felt this way in 1993 as well, you know? it's
Yeah, I've been thinking about that, that how technology just, you have no, you cannot predict the speed with which technology changes, but we do know that it's changing exponentially faster as time goes by, because technology enables more technology.
Which begs to question, you know, if at the speed it goes, if it starts taking, I mean, in the 50s and 60s, a person could work at a factory job right out of high school, buy a house, buy a car, and put their kids through college without going into debt. Now people are lucky to have like a big box retail store job. That's, you know, our, you know, primary 9-to-5 type of deal. And with the more we're going towards like the Amazon.com route with delivery and whatnot, that is making retail stores kind of obsolete.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that there wouldn't necessarily not be retail stores anymore, but it would probably just be stuck to like the bigger cities, like, you know, kind of like Apple stores more than anything. You're not going to find an Apple store in Duluth, Minnesota, I don't think.
Really? I think they probably have an Apple store in Duluth. Let's find out.
Yeah. Okay. Google Apple store Duluth.
Let's all find out.
Yes. All right. There is not one that I'm seeing.
Wow.
I was right.
We've got three and they don't have any.
Yeah.
What's that? Duluth, Minnesota?
Yes.
Nope. But they have one in Edina, in Minnetonka, Rossville, and Bloomington. Like, Bloomington's the Mall of America, so I understand that. But, like, what about, what's the, like, capital of Minnesota? Minneapolis.
And like Bloomington, I believe, is just a suburb of Minneapolis. So,
oh, really?
Like,
okay.
Right next to it, yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, okay, you learn something every day. There is no Apple store in Duluth.
In other words, Tim was right.
Tim was right. Doesn't happen much, so we celebrate.
I know, folks. I know.
How about you, Tim? How was your week?
My week has been going good. I work with dogs now.
Dog man.
Yeah, I...
Half man, half dog.
Something like a woof woof, baby. play with my... No, anyway. Didn't finish that one. Anyway, yeah, I've been hesitant to talk about work with, you know, so many wonderful employment opportunities I've had over the past couple of years. But a doggy daycare decided to hire me. And, like, being able to work with dogs for, you know, half my shift and, you know, the other shift doing the grunt work to make sure that these dogs' experience at the place is as good as it can be. Like, my goodness, I've come home happy for once from work, you know. So there is that. That is a positive.
Yeah. I mean, what a huge positive to come home happy from work. Like...
Yeah.
That's giant.
Get to hang out with the bitches all day. I'm no meteorologist, but I'm pretty sure it's raining bitches.
Well, it's also really close to the Friends Talking Nerdy Studios. So you're able to even walk there if you want to in like half an hour. So
yeah, literally a half hour walk from, you know, door to door. Because, I mean, there are times where the professor has, you know, like meetings and stuff happening here. And it's best for me to be out of the house. And I'm the type to time stuff, you know, like if I know I need to be out for an hour, I will look at my watch at the 30-minute mark and then walk on back. And going all the way to that road is exactly 30 minutes.
That's cool.
Yeah. So there is that. We do want to give an update on the Chris Jericho situation real
quick. Yeah, please do.
Now, as we mentioned last week, Chris Jericho in 4 o'clock drunken Twitter exchange started running his mouth and made his company look bad. From there, wrestling reporter Nick Houseman, you know, after Chris Jericho said, I never signed any NDAs, Nick Houseman said, well, you've made other people sign NDAs. And on his podcast, after he sent that tweet, he compared Chris Jericho to Harvey Weinstein. You know, and that led to, at the recent AEW pay-per-view, the audience, when Chris Jericho was in the ring yelling, NDA, and they had, somebody had a sign that says, Jared, go away. You know, things like that. There is a bit of an update here. Nick Houseman did a couple of days ago go on his podcast again and kind of roll back as best as he could some of what he said. Now, he made it clear that he was not the one that came out with the Kylie Rae accusation. The accusation being that Kylie Rae, at the start of All Elite Wrestling, she was a performer there, was invited to Chris Jericho's room with the understanding that other people would be there and it would be essentially a work meeting, but it was just Chris Jericho. Something happened, and then that caused her to ask Tony Khan for her release, and he just up and granted it with no questions asked, and she was able to join a new company within a few months after that. This Houseman guy kind of just walked it back and tried to say that he wasn't implying anything really. It's just he knew stories. And like I mentioned last week, and this kind of really illustrates it for me and made me lose a lot of respect for this guy. This was dirty handed. To me, this is no different than like a district attorney that breaks the rules to make a bad guy stay in jail longer. Look what happened with Bill Cosby. You had a DA that went back on a previous, previous agreement that Cosby had made and ended up, and because of that DA breaking that rule, Cosby ended up getting free from jail.
Yeah.
And Cosby is very much guilty for what he did. But, when that information first came out, I did say that this, just because the person in question is a bad person that we really know did something bad, that doesn't give the right for someone in a position of power like a district attorney, or in a far less serious case, this case with Nick Houseman and Chris Jericho, when you have that power and you abuse it, you shouldn't have that power anymore.
Oh, absolutely.
So I, again, wanted to put that out there because, one, if it is not true and this is just something that got started that made Jericho look bad, it doesn't matter if he's a drunk or not, it shouldn't have happened. On the flip side, though, Nick Houseman should consider the fact, that this isn't, wouldn't, if Jericho is guilty of, what he has been accused of, think of all the people in power who've had similar things happen, like Jeffrey Epstein. Mm-hmm. In the early 2000s, he had a little legal kerfuffle and was able to weasel his way out of it. Essentially, he had to report to jail for work during the day in the 2000s, and then at night he could spend his nights in his mansion. So he didn't really suffer much power there.
No, that sounds ridiculous.
Yeah. And again, the thing I'm pointing out is that by doing that, you make it harder for harder to stop the people that are actually causing problems that need to be stopped.
Yeah.
Because they find that, it's like something like this comes to light and then they finally see, ooh, I've been making a mistake by doing X, Y, and Z. Now I will do this. So they will stay off my back for that.
Right.
So anyway, it's just a fucked up situation. Chris Jericho just should have, he should get off of social media. he caused more of a problem for his company than he wanted. He's a company guy. They're paying him big money. And yeah, I'm sure he wants that company to succeed, but this didn't help at all.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but the Epstein list too came out. We've had some names on there that were quite interesting. Stephen Hawking on the list.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Was Ricky Gervais on the list?
I don't know. And one thing to keep in mind is that Epstein was more than an international pimp. He was also an influence peddler. So there could be a number of names that show up on these lists to where these people aren't necessarily there to do what Bill Clinton did, okay? Mm-hmm. Or Prince Andrew did. They could just be there because it's a billionaire. Apparently this guy liked to court, the intelligentsia. Like a Noam Chomsky, I guess, was on the list. I don't know Chomsky enough. Maybe he does have a problem that, he needs to be brought to law enforcement.
So many of these people do.
That's true.
That's what we're discovering is that, it's not, Stephen Hawking, are you fucking kidding me? Well, like these people are hero people,
Yeah. And what is concerning to me is that we're not seeing more people in the government getting curious about why this happened, because like there's a lot of Godfather 2 type of shit going on here if you think about it. Now, what do I mean? I don't think you've seen Godfather 2, right?
Is that the one with the horse head?
No, that was Godfather 1.
Okay, I've seen Godfather 1. I know that much.
Yeah, Godfather 2, you know, obviously we're talking about the mafia here, and someone that liked to visit the mafia in certain areas because they had brothels was a senator. And the senator was causing the Corleone family a lot of problems. So what they ended up doing is when he was at a brothel one time with one of the women, they drugged him, killed the woman, and then when he woke up, he was made to think he killed the hooker.
Mm-hmm.
And then the mob came in and go, we can clean this up for you. We just need you to do a favor for us.
Who was the woman that they killed for this?
A random hooker.
Oh, shit. I mean, that's the part of the story that's disgusting.
I agree. It's
revolting.
It's what this Epstein thing kind of screams that. And the fact that you have so many prominent politicians from both sides of the aisle here, folks. Now, if you're a progressive and you see Trump's name on the list, don't be celebrating too much, because there are plenty of well-known Democratic figures that are on that list as well. And again, like I've tried to say, not every single person on that list was there for any
legal purposes. Now, is this the witness list?
I don't know. It's not like the little black book or whatever. It's just they released to the public a lot of information that had been previously sealed. They unsealed it.
Okay.
And it's names that was associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
So the names, you know, again, it's not like a little black book or anything like that, but I believe it's something like flight logs and other things.
Yeah. I mean, I saw that Hillary Clinton is going to be a witness in one of these cases or a deposition or something related to this.
Yeah, I mean, this just screams to me. It wouldn't shock me too, because like the types of action stories I think of, you know, you think of spies and all that. Like, what if Epstein was working with a foreign government and was able to get this information, you know, in Godfather 2 type of ways? Like, oh, Bill Clinton, I saw you slept with that 16-year-old. How about you tell me this so I don't release it to the public, and then you take that information and bring it to the Russians or whoever, you know?
Right.
You know, and
it's like people used to be discovered as gay or lesbian, and that was blackmail kind of material. And so that's why, they said that's why they couldn't serve in the military or couldn't be involved in intelligence gathering activities because it was too easy to blackmail them.
Ultimately, we're seeing this. We're seeing the public kind of talking about this now, but I could also see this being something that in a couple of weeks, especially with primary season coming underway here within the next couple of weeks as we record this, probably people will stop talking about it. I just think that this is something that needs a little bit more attention, you know, by government authorities than what it's currently being given. It's great to see that there are still some court-related stuff going through, but we need some more information because, again, way too many politicians are on that list from both sides of the aisle here, you know, and we need to find out what they were doing there. We need to find out what this guy's links were to other countries potentially, or just what the hell was going on.
Yeah.
Anyway, any other thoughts about Mr. Epstein?
Absolutely not. I don't think we should give him any more airtime.
No pun intended.
Oh, Tim.
Anyway, that was a good one. All right. So from that joke, how about we kick it over to one of our friends at the Deluxe Edition Network?
That sounds awesome. Let's do that.
Sit back, relax, check out this clip.
In a world where podcasts have become bland and stale, one podcast dares to stand above. Barrel Age Flicks Podcast.
We're reviewing drinks,
breaking down movies, busting each other's balls,
and we're big in Hong Kong.
Barrel Age Flicks Season 4. It's in the bottle.
Yeah, yo! Available on Spotify, Apple Music, Audible, iHeartRadio, TikTok, YouTube, Patreon, and OnlyFans.
The older you get, the more time passes, and the more time passes, you're just like, that happened so long ago? You know, because 40 years ago, when I was when it was 1984, I was 8 years old, and thinking about 40 years previous was a foreign concept. And now it just seems like yesterday that it was 1984 when I was in second grade and had my first crush on my teacher.
Right. And 40 years later was the 1940s, so the end of World War II. Women were still only wearing skirts. You couldn't wear pants. Women were still considered the half of a person attached to a male person. In some states, women couldn't have their own bank accounts.
Yeah, wasn't it the 70s that, you know, women were finally able to sign up for credit cards on their own?
Yeah.
Just think about that, folks. This, like, in a lot of ways, school did us a disservice as well as the media in the 80s, because it seemed like it was always there, but it should have been reinforced that these were new and they should be celebrated, you know? And like, the credit card thing, I didn't realize until a few years back myself.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Women did not have a separate economic identity until the 70s.
Yep.
And so because of that, which had been true for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, in Europe and the New World after colonialism. I don't know about those societies that existed in the New World before colonialism. I just know in Western societies that women were considered this not a real person. They had to have a man, either their father or a brother, a cousin that's male. Like you find a man that you can attach a woman to. Without being attached to a man, a woman has no existence. Have a mortgage, can't apply for credit cards, can't open a bank account, have to have their male protector, whoever that is, do all of that for them.
In some ways, I guess that's something I appreciate growing up in a single parent household with my mother, being able to see her be strong and, kind of lead the charge as well as she could during her childhood and whatnot. Yeah, it gave me a strong figure to look up to. Now, looking back, I can also see to where, like me, she probably dealt with anxiety a lot. Because I can imagine, being as poor as we were growing up, not necessarily knowing where the next paycheck was or knowing you can get money in certain ways, wouldn't do well for somebody in their psyche and their self-esteem and all that stuff.
No, of course not. Of course not. But that sort of feeling of you have to do what you have to do.
Yeah. One good thing my mother did do, though, while she didn't necessarily like us going outside that much because of the neighborhood we were in, it's not that they were bad kids, just poor neighborhoods tend to be a little rougher.
Mm-hmm.
She ended up, the big splurge she always made sure we had was cable TV. And because of that, MTV ended up, for me at least, I can't necessarily speak for my sister, but for me at least was my beginning education really in music.
Mm-hmm.
And what we wanted to talk about today is a particularly eventful year in music history. I was surprised at how little albums that I normally listen to were released during that year. But we wanted to talk about our five favorite songs from 1984.
That's right. So I was 10 in 1984. I don't remember the 80s. I mean, the 80s were a really hard time financially. Interest rates were out of control, like up to 20% interest on a mortgage, or at least a loan for land. So there was sort of economic depressed times. And I think young people during economic depressed times are more creative because they have to sort of create a culture that is thrifty but at the same time, vibrant and energizing, right? So I think of people like Cyndi Lauper, who in the 80s was this amazing performer, amazing songwriter. And her stories, she was a working class person. And so her stories on her videos were always tied to working class experiences. And so she was like this amazing, unique working class person who had been successful and still telling those stories of what her life had been like before. Anyway, the 80s had performers like that and they had songwriters like that. But the radio music was heinous.
It was, even from a lot of big-time artists. The synthesizer was a cancer on the music industry in a lot of ways. I mean, I am not against synthesizer. When done right, it can be beautiful. But this was at a time to where they were forcing it into everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, some good moments. Even ZZ Top ended up finding a way to using it in a way that still worked for them. You know, they didn't.
And they got that from another band.
Duran Duran. Yeah, which, you know, I have much respect for ZZ Top for doing that, because they went to the Duran Duran show and the guys from Duran Duran like, oh, what are you guys doing here? And, you know, Billy Gibbons was like, we love your music, even though it's, you know, from the synthesizer, electronic and all that, we still see it has blues roots. And we just wanted to talk to you about, you know, using this because we're thinking about using it on our stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And beautiful exchange. I mean, a band from the 70s learning from a new band in the 80s. What an honor that must have been.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like fun. I mean, remember when Simon Le Bon was like the guy.
Yeah, now he's like, what is it, like Botox or something?
Oh, I haven't seen him lately. Is he Botoxed up?
Maybe. I mean, I know there are like plenty of hair metal acts. Those guys, for whatever reason, have low self-esteem. A number of them just, if they're not going the Vince Neil route and, you know, working out at Golden Corral every day, then you know, they are going through the heavy, you know, cosmetic surgery.
Right, because they're trying to stay young.
I'm still young, man. You're 62. Shut up. But what we wanted to do this week, we wanted to celebrate music from 40 years ago. So we're going to do a nerdy five here. We're going to talk about our five favorite songs from that year. And, you know, we'll also mention the albums, of course, that they came from, if we remember. But wanted to just have a nice little playlist here that we'll have up on YouTube that you all can enjoy, because we are now members of the YouTube Music family.
That's right. YouTube Music.
All right.
So unfortunately, I forgot to cancel our subscription to Apple Music.
I thought you did.
I did for next month.
Oh.
I didn't do it in time for it to happen this month.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, so I gotta remember to do that.
All right. Well, what we'll do, we'll go back and forth. We'll talk about the songs, why we chose them, have a little conversation going. And then at the end of all this fun, you will be able to go into our show description and tap on the link to YouTube to listen to the playlist. Did you want to start things off or do you want me to?
I'll start things off with the best album, the best song of 1984. Ready?
Yeah.
Purple Rain off the album Purple Rain.
Good song.
Amazing song. I would say Prince's best song, certainly his best song in his early years. Now, maybe his later work was just generally better than his early work. But yeah, I just remember the movie. I got the album. I mean, I just loved it. And I loved Purple. And I wanted to be just like him. I didn't want to be like Apollonia. I wanted to be like Prince. I wanted to wear purple trench coat with stuff on it and, you know, high heel boots. And, you know, just I wanted to be Prince. And I tried. I wanted to be Prince and Madonna.
Mm.
And I was 10. And I tried real hard to dress like both of them.
Madonna.
Yeah, Madonna or Madince. Madince.
Yeah, it's the Russian prince, anyway.
The Russian prince, Madis.
Well, for me, you know, I really started becoming aware of overall music and not just individual bands about 87, 88. That's when I started watching MTV more regularly. So the original Prince run was just prior to me getting interest. Like, I think he was doing... like Alphabet Street or Sexy Motherfucker around the time I started, you know, paying attention, you know, to the fact that he was a thing. Also the Batman soundtrack that he did.
Oh, uh-huh.
Anyway, so at first I wasn't a fan. Over time, I've definitely come to appreciate, his artistry overall. You know, that is not to say, you know, he's broken beyond, the greatest hits category for me, but you get a good greatest hits collection or playlist together of Prince, I'm listening to it and I'm going to enjoy it. Because even, you know, stuff like later in his career, like the Musicology album, great album.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yep.
All right. Well, what's your first one?
All right. This, my first choice here, was co-written by Michael McDonald.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it came off of the album 1984. It's the song from Van Halen called I'll Wait. Now there are obviously bigger anthems on that album, like Jump, Panama, Hot for Teacher. But this song right here is one I always keep coming back to because it's moody, it's darker, different in tone than, you know, the typical party Van Halen, type of atmosphere.
The song that goes, I'll wait till the sun goes down.
Till your love goes down. Yeah.
Okay. Till your love goes down. I'm swimming straight from the heart.
Exactly.
Something like that.
Something like that. Yeah. To me, it's a nice moody piece. Like, I mean, I've, you know, as a writer myself, a lot of times music can help put me in a particular mood of a scene. And this song kind of does feel like the gritty part of an action movie, not necessarily the hardcore action scenes, but you're building up to it. Like you're on your way driving to the place where the final boss is at and you're ready to fight and just blare. It's a great sonic song. And like I said, much different than the other songs on that album, and it would have been nice if David Lee Roth kind of matured a little bit, because I think people would have paid attention to him a lot more than they did once he went solo.
Yeah, of course they would.
Yeah, but he had to be Diamond Dave. Hey,
Diamond Dave.
Just a gigolo.
Yeah, I remember loving that album. I mean, it was chock full of hits, really.
Everybody else.
I remember being in middle school when that album came out, I believe. Or did it come out in 84?
1984? I guess
that's the whole point.
Yeah.
So I was not quite in middle school, but I think that's when I started listening to that album.
Yeah, it was the first instance of Eddie Van Halen really kind of showing that he wanted to expand, because even Jump sounded a lot different from, you know, like Ink Talking About Love off their first album.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that Eddie was using a lot more synthesizers yet again, you know, and in the I'll Wait song, there is a great use of the synthesizers. You know, Eddie was kind of expanding his knowledge as a musician and wanted to also incorporate a lot more synthesizers in the work. And I think in a lot of ways to great effect.
Yeah, totally.
All right.
Loved it.
What's your next one?
My next one is going to be Here Comes the Rain Again by the Eurythmics.
Mm.
So this whole album of Eurythmics songs was also really great, like tons of hits. And this was my favorite. I also play this one on the guitar and sing because I like it so much and because it's really easy to play. So it's a nice, easy song to play. It's cool. People like it. It's very great for Portland because Here Comes the Rain Again, let me tell you. Not that it's been, I mean, it's been a pretty rainy weekend, and apparently it's supposed to snow this week. No?
Who knows? I didn't see anything about that, but that doesn't mean it's not true.
Yeah, it's supposed to be very cold this week, and it's supposed to snow.
Great time to start working with dogs outside.
Right, from 3 to 7, or 11 to 7.
Yeah.
In the coldest part of the night.
Right? Well, it's not negative 11 Maine, so.
That's true, and it's not, you know, 6 a.m., which will actually be colder than 7 p.m.
Thanks for the reminder. But Eurythmics, another band that I ended up becoming more familiar with later, not because like by the time like 87, 88, I think they had already disbanded her and Dave Stewart and she had gone solo.
Yeah. I mean, it was a short lasting, but it was amazing. They were amazing together.
Oh, and to be fair, they did get back together. I mean, that is very good news that, you know, they were able to take the personal differences aside, because divorces kind of suck, but were able to get back together and continue making music. I mean, I think I started falling in love with them. Oh my goodness, let me see if I can find it here real quick, but there was a song that they did on The Sopranos. Okay, I Saved the World Today. It was Stevie Van Zandt, who was part of Bruce Springsteen's band, was one of the actors on The Sopranos, and he was the musical director, which is Was good for that show because he knew so many people in the music industry. He was able to get some top name bands, including the Rolling Stones, to contribute songs to that show. And one of them was Eurythmics with "I Saved the World Today." But Annie Lennox, what a voice!
What a voice!
I mean,
what a voice! I've heard her sing recently. She did at the Grammys maybe 5 years ago. She and Hozier did Hozier's song that was very popular at the time about "You're My Religion." I can't remember how it went, but he and Annie Lennox sang it on the Grammys, and she just knocked it out of the park. It was really so good.
Yeah, and if you want to see a great performance from her, I believe it's from 92, the Freddie Mercury tribute concert, her and David Bowie singing "Under Pressure."
Oh, wow.
I remember watching it live on MTV back in the day. Like, how can you not forget that?
How can you forget that?
Yeah. How can you not forget that? I mean, you know what I mean.
How can you forget that?
Exactly.
Yeah. How could you not forget that?
Okay. Can I go on to the next one?
Well, let me just say that I would love to see that. So you have to show that to me sometime.
Okay, I will.
Okay.
All right. Number two on my list. And to be clear, there is no official ranking here.
No, it's random.
It's a random list here. This is not scientifically put together, but this is a song that is off a soundtrack album, and it starred Mr. Burns, Lenny, and Jamie Lee Curtis's husband.
Wow, weird.
Spinal Tap. The soundtrack album, I chose Big Bottom.
Big Bottom.
And it's a fun song. What I absolutely love about about that movie, about that soundtrack, and I think makes it work is the fact that they were such good musicians and made such great songs.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been believable. I mean, it was believable. If you were unfamiliar with those actors, the beginning of it is very like No Way Home or No Direction Home. Sorry, that Bob Dylan documentary that is just black and white, and they just sort of follow them around and see what's going on. Like, I'm sure they did that with other bands, but to me, it reminded me most of
Don't Look Back.
Don't Look Back.
Yeah, I mean, the movie is brilliant, directed by Rob Reiner. It had some early appearances by legends of comedy like Dana Carvey, Billy Crystal, Fran Drescher was in the movie. The Hello Cleveland! Ozzy Osbourne said that when he first saw the movie, he didn't know it was a comedy. He just thought it was an actual band. because stuff like that happened, you know, like the Hello Cleveland bit is where the band got lost in the tunnels below the stage.
Right. Hello Cleveland.
Yeah. That actually has happened to other bands before.
Sure.
Yeah. And, you know, overall funny movie. I heard that there is a sequel that is being developed.
Oh my goodness.
With the original crew.
Awesome.
So there is that. But the music stands up more than anything, because I first became aware of Spinal Tap from their second album that they released in the 90s. They just released an album and had a couple videos on MTV, including Bitch School.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I don't remember this.
Bitch School is so funny. It's so funny. It's like makes fun of hair metal, but is a great hair metal song.
I see.
Yeah. All right. What is your next one?
My next one is going to be Like a Virgin. Touched for the very first time. So, Like a Virgin is off the album, I believe, Like a Virgin by Madonna. And boy, like, I wanted to be Madonna in that video. Do you remember that video? She's got like the bustier, lace bustier, and the tulle skirt, and covered in bangles and neon colored scarves, and, you know, just really rocking it out. And that's what I wanted to wear to the mall.
Now,
10-year-old.
Now, this album was before she took over for Pablo Escobar and his drug empire, right? Before she killed her love interest, Weird Al Yankovic, at the Grammys. Remember that movie?
No.
Oh, you remember the Al Yankovic story? The Roku movie.
Oh, the recent thing.
Yeah, we saw it.
Yes, I do remember it.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about a movie from the 80s.
No.
This recent movie, yes, that we have seen.
Yeah, okay. Anyways. The best jokes are when you have to explain.
Yeah, so it's a great song, great gal back then in the 80s.
From Michigan. Detroit, Michigan gal there. We've talked about it, you know, when we were talking about this topic before we recorded, you know, like, I love her music. I would put her in the greatest hits category. You know, I'm not going to buy a full album, but, you know, if the greatest hits come out, come on, Like a Virgin is a great song. Just Like a Prayer, mm-hmm. Like a Prayer, Vogue and all that. So she's put out a lot of good stuff. She's also a business person.
Yeah.
You know,
and she's an amazing business person.
There's nothing wrong with that. But on the flip side, it does kind of limit you to the type of music you can do compared to one of her early contemporaries at this time, Cyndi Lauper. I mean, Cyndi Lauper could have continued to try to make songs like Girls Just Want to Have Fun, but she didn't necessarily crave the MTV type of attention. She wanted to make the music that spoke to her and realized that that meant playing in smaller venues, but she's still very much, you know, the rich person for doing what she's doing, still playing great music at this particular time. But, you know, Madonna is Madonna.
Yeah, and exactly.
What a great way to talk about Madonna. No, sorry, man.
All right, let's have your third.
All right, this is one that kind of grew on me recently. I mean, he is the guitarist on the song Let's Dance from David Bowie.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble off their album Couldn't Stand the Weather, and it's his cover of Voodoo Child's Slight Return. Now, he was one of the first major artists that, you know, made a Hendrix cover and got away with it. What do I mean by that? Guitar players have so much veneration, worship Hendrix so much, that if someone attempts to do his song, 9 times out of 10, they're not going to like it because it doesn't fit to the standard that that song deserves, rightfully or wrongfully. But Stevie Ray Vaughan was easily one of the greatest guitarists to ever put on a six string. And this song, just sonically, it's one of those perfect songs that you can listen to with headphones and walk outside and just feel like the air moving type of deal. It makes it sound like a classic blues riff too. Just one hell of a great song.
Yeah. I'm not even familiar with the song, honestly.
Okay. Well, it will be on the playlist.
Okay, good. I'll have to listen to it.
Yes. All right. What is your next one?
My next one is What's Love Got to Do with It? Off the album, What's Love Got to Do with It?
Wasn't it Private Dancer?
It was Private Dancer. Of course, you're right. It was a black and white album cover with her dancing in a very short black dress. Loved that album. Forgot its name. But it was a toss-up for me between Private Dancer and What's Love Got to Do with It. But I thought What's Love Got to Do with It was more autobiographical. And so in that way, I liked it a little bit better.
And I get what you mean. Now, to be clear, she didn't write that song. The song was, you know, given to her. And I think somebody else before her may have covered it as well. But the heart, you know, the what makes a legendary singer is when they can take a song by somebody else and make it their own.
Wow, and make it seem autobiographical.
Exactly. You know, so, you know, hats off to her. We obviously, in the past, if you go back in our archives, we do have an episode honoring her that we did have a playlist on Apple Music set up.
Nice.
But she's another one that for me, it took a while to get respect for. Because by the time I was becoming aware of music, she was already the VH1 artist.
Right. She wasn't an MTV artist.
Yeah. I didn't watch.
And I can say you did not like VHS, VV.
VH1.
VH1.
Yeah. Not until the 90s. The late 90s is this.
They had good shows on in the 90s.
Good shows, and when they did play music, essentially the music that was on MTV in the 80s started being played on VH1 in the 90s.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, we were the new adults at that time.
Right.
You know.
We thought we were the shit.
Yeah. We're always going to do this. Yay.
Yay, we're in charge. Yay.
All right, shall I come on with my next one?
Yes, please.
All right, my next one. This was off of an iconic album. The title track, Born in the USA, definitely an anthem for a lot of people, when in fact it was meant as kind of the opposite. You know, people kind of interpret it as a pro-USA song, and, you know, I don't think you can say that Bruce Springsteen is against the USA, but he does want to tell stories about what it's really like, you know, but I didn't choose that song. I chose Glory Days. Glory Days for me is a lot more fun. It's just much more traditional. I mean, you could see this, you know, coming out in the 60s. It's sing-alongable. I like that. It's just a fun damn song. Not the greatest song in human history, but just when it's in the car and you're driving, or you got it on headphones and you're walking somewhere and it's playing, you're feeling good. And also, the older I get, you know, the more I can understand the lyrics in terms of being able to enjoy reminiscing when it's done the right way, and not, you know, focusing on life sucks today, I wish it was like the past, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So important.
Now, I know Bruce Springsteen's your absolute favorite.
Well, you know, when he first started, they were like, he's new Bob Dylan. And I hate anybody that got called the new Bob Dylan, because there is no such thing. Bob Dylan is the new Bob Dylan. No one can replace Bob Dylan.
I'm overrated. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I mean, that's how I felt about Bob Dylan, and I still do. Like,
and I get your point, too, because, you know, saying that about a particular new artist doesn't help that new artist out at all. You know, like, Springsteen, I'm sure, wanted to be the first Springsteen, not the next Dylan.
Right, exactly. But it was very similar when he first started.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, Bruce Springsteen loved him a thesaurus when he was writing his songs in the early days, because they were really fucking wordy. But, you know, by the time Born in the USA came about, I think he became a lot more polished for, you know, FM radio, the 2-3-4 minute classics.
Yeah.
You know, and not, you know, reading an entire novel in 7 minutes, even though some of the longer ones, Jungle Land, I think is a great song.
But it's super long.
Super long, but it's worth it because of that Clarence Clemens solo.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Love it. All right. What's your next one?
My last one is from one of my favorite albums, which is Stop Making Sense, which is Talking Heads' album. And the single that I chose from that amazing album that is just chock full of good songs was Burning Down the House.
Well, I might as well go with my number five then, because it will make sense to you.
Okay.
It's from the Stop Making Sense album. It's Once in a Lifetime.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, this, I fell in love with the Talking Heads because of the Stop Making Sense album.
Yeah.
I think it was in the 90s when they released the expanded version.
Yeah.
Yeah, because live albums back in the day didn't have much on there. But just the energy of the band. And I've, you know, a few years back, finally got a chance to actually see the movie for the first time. And loved how it starts out just, you know, him with an acoustic guitar and a boombox, and it goes all the way to a full band and choir by the end, and just the intensity. But for me, Once in a Lifetime was great, but you can't go wrong with Burning Down the House either.
Yeah. So did you see the redo they did of it at, like, maybe 2022? It was amazing. I mean, they basically just redid the whole thing, and it was great.
Yeah, I mean, they, on the one hand, really wish that they had been together longer. But, you know, I mean, they did kind of disband in 87, 88 anyway, so...
Yeah, I mean, it was not long-lived.
Yeah, but I would much, you know, like, kind of like Star Trek The Next Generation, I would rather have something end when it's going at its absolute best than keep on going and then, you know, die a terrible death that nobody knows.
Right.
You know, like the TV show 24, for instance, even though you loathe the existence of that show.
I just don't understand why you think it's good.
I can see its flaws. When it first came out, I thought the format of a serialized show, I mean, that got me. That, you know... And I like the idea of telling a story progressively over a number of weeks to, you know, get people anticipating the ending. But American television being what it is, you know, they just recycled so much. The more the show that went on.
Sure.
Anyway, 1984, folks. Like I said, in terms of albums that were released that year, there weren't many that I would put like on my top list of albums ever. But you can't deny that there were, as the kids say, some absolute bangers that were released that year that are still influencing music today. And 40 years, kids, flies by so fast.
So fast, kids. All you 10-year-olds out there, you're not going to be 10 for very long, let me tell you.
Yes, suckers. Any other thoughts on 1984?
Nope.
It was a great book, by the way.
It also was like the Cold War was happening. That's weird.
Yep, the Los Angeles Summer Olympics were that year, where that was where Russia boycotted because the USA boycotted the Winter Olympics in 1980. And in 84, I guess it was either Burger King or McDonald's had a thing to where, you know, if this Olympic country wins, then, you know, you get a free Big Mac or something like that, and ended up losing a lot of money because they were hoping that traditionally Soviet dominated sports would be won by the Soviets, and they weren't.
So. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Simpsons made fun of that too with Krusty Burger. During the Olympics as well. And, you know, Krusty at the end was like, "Will you pick, you people are all pigs. Stop coming here."
Huh.
Yeah.
Sounds funny.
Yeah, he had to be there. Anyway.
I guess he had to be there.
All right. Each Monday, we'll have something in this podcast space to entertain your ear holes. Until we meet again, we bid you adieu.
So long.
Like a surgeon.
Hey.
Subscribe to Friendstalking Nerdy on iTunes, the Google Play Music Store, as well as Spotify. Remember to support Friendstalking Nerdy on Patreon. Goodbye, darling.